Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Volume.
Welcome back, everyone, to Inside the Garage Podcast. I'm Connor Radigan, along with
KJ Wallace
and Cam Hart.
Today, we have a very special guest, esteemed Notre Dame legend, Tommy Rees. Coach Tommy Rees, I apologize.
Yes, sir.
Sound effects. Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right, Coach, how you doing?
I'm great. Yeah, I'm good to be here. Takes me back to my college days a little bit.
Where'd you stay when you were here?
Off campus on a house on South Bend Ave, right by like Parisi's, big boathouse. Yeah, still over there. Gotcha. We were asked to leave a semester in. and then we were at a house over here, like on Juniper.
Okay.
And I think some guys lived in there after us for a couple of years. And then we were the first people to live at University Edge my senior year.
For real.
Because we were only there for a semester. We were the first ones in.
Sheesh.
And there was like four different groups of four that all lived right there together.
Who were your main roommates?
It was Zach, Martin, Chris Watt, who's with the O-line now that you guys know. Dan Fox, he played linebacker.
Foxy.
And then Tyler Eifert for 2 years because he graduated early. He left all of us for the league. So you guys know Griff. But yeah, Ty and then Nick Martin, Zach's brother, kind of crashed on our couch or extra room most of the time. So we had a pretty good house.
You were the first people at UEdge and it was new?
Brand new, first people.
That's crazy.
It's kind of weird to think about.
It's weird to think about.
We had McGlinchey on here the other day, and he was talking about how like so much different. Like guys are living off earlier. Like you have a lot of place to live. Like all that type of stuff.
Mike came on as official, and was at our house. It was a problem. So yeah, Mike was a freshman last year, and then when I came back here in 17, he was still on the team.
Oh, that's right.
Was UEdge like one of the only developed apartment complexes that's still around right now?
Yeah, like the ones right by the Goog were kind of being built.
Okay.
But a lot of students didn't live there yet. Like Turtle Creek, those old ones were there. Eddy Street was kind of going up. But again, not a ton of students were there.
Gotcha.
What did Eddy Street have at that point? Like restaurants, like restaurant wise, was O'Rourke's there?
It was called something else. It for wasn't real? Called O'Rourke's. Yeah, it was called something else. But Brothers was there towards the end. Chipotle was there. Five Guys was there. And then pretty much everything else has been recycled.
Gotcha.
All right. Let's see. Let's start in the beginning. So, born in L.A., moved to Illinois. How old were you when you moved to Illinois?
I was five, yeah. So, my dad was working at UCLA for a while in the early 90s, and then he got a job with the Bears, and he was from Chicago. My mom's from L.A., and so we moved back to his home, sort of.
So, do you claim Chicago? You don't say you're a West Coast kid, or would you still say you're a West Coast kid?
No, I don't. I claim Chicago. I say I'm from the suburbs of Chicago. I don't claim the city that hard, although
I've heard
I want
that so
to.
Many times since I've been
school, no, it's like everyone else that goes here.
Honestly.
But I'll clear it up. Like if someone's from California, I'll say, hey, I was born out there, or my mom's side's from out there. Okay. So, but definitely Chicago.
Gotcha.
So, like, Sorry, I don't want to butcher the name. You and Eddie went to this. It was like
Lake Forest. Lake, yeah, I'm from Lake Bluff. He went. Yeah, with Lake Forest High and Riley Mills.
So
Mills Riley with Mills with you.
Yeah, I didn't Riley, me and Eddie all same school. Yeah,
sheesh, that's
a beat. Okay.
So would you say? I don't know if it's maybe it's the case now, but when you played, would you say like Notre Dame was like how many people went there before you did from the high school?
No one for like football. I mean, you'd have a handful of students. It was a good public school, so like it was smart kids, so people could get in.
Yeah.
You know, probably 6 to 8 people a class, maybe.
But no football.
No football.
Is this a big school?
It's like 1,700 kids.
Okay.
It was 6A. Okay. There's 8. 8's the biggest, so we were 6A. All
right. Would you say you
were the start of this movement then?
Yeah.
I got to jump in, yeah.
Pipeline.
You begin this pipeline.
There, pipeline. Lake Forest will never be known for its like Division I football players,
oh,
you know?
Got you.
Okay.
But when we have one, I kind of feel like it's my duty to make sure they end up at Notre Dame. You know what I mean? Do we count Eddie, though? I don't know. Does Shides count as?
No, he has to count.
His brother's coming, too. His brother's a good player.
Good. His brother's like Joe. Like
safety?
You got to show love to Eddie.
He's like a wideout quarterback. Yeah, Shides. His brother, they went to the state semis this year. They had a great run, and he was kind of their star.
He's a wideout and a quarterback?
Yeah, he played quarterback for them, but I think he's coming here as more of a wideout.
Oh, gotcha.
He's an athletic body, like 6'2".
Yeah, he's long.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. 6'2". That'll work.
So when you played there in Notre Dame, became part of like the question or the conversation where you went to school. Was it an easy decision? Was Notre Dame like very high on your priority list?
Like going into it, no. You know, like I was, I look a lot like I do now. Like I was not very like, you know, like physically like intimidating or like what you would think of as a high D1 quarterback. But like early on, my first offer was like Bowling Green.
Okay.
And then Miami of Ohio offer. And I was like, look, if at the end of the day, I'm going to Miami of Ohio to play football. Like a lot of my buddies went there. My sister went there.
Are you and Gus the same age?
No, Gus is like 4 or 5 years younger than I am.
Okay. Wow, that was, that would be funny.
How did that?
Like I was all set. I was like, look, if I go to the MAC, like that's kind of what I thought. I'll go play there and have a great time in Miami. I mean, that's a good spot to be.
It's a fun school for sure.
Connor knows.
Yeah. Good for him. Yeah, you all know. And then bigger schools kept coming through and I would throw for them and everybody kind of gave me the same line. You got to come to camp, which I know now, like what that means. Like sometimes it means, hey, you got to come to camp and prove it. And sometimes it's just a
bullshit answer.
Well, I think each situation is different. Like those, there was some truth. They were there to see you. And then I came here and threw for camp, went to Stanford. But like before those two, I went to Tennessee when Kiffin was the head coach and I threw down there and did really well and they ended up offering me. So that kind of snowballed. And, you know, once you get one, others come in. And I ended up only with like 3 or 4 Power 5 offers. And I grew up not liking Notre Dame, to be honest. Like, you know, like Chicago, there's so many Notre Dame fans and you're either one side or the other. And I didn't grow up with any real allegiance to it. You know, my dad, weirdly enough, we both work here now, but his dad was born about 40 minutes from here and he was an Indiana fan. So like he didn't love Notre Dame.
Gotcha.
And so, I like once I started getting recruited, meeting the people, getting on campus, then I've, you know, I knew shortly after I got exposed to it, this is where I wanted to be. But like, I never thought it was going to be an opportunity. And I remember like going back to high school with a Notre Dame offer and people still like didn't believe it or didn't want it to be true.
Really?
But, it all worked out in the end.
When did your dad start working here?
He got here same season I did in 17. But I came in like late January, early February, and then he came like right as camp started. It's like August.
Right. That works out then. That works out. Like, what were your 4 Power 5 offers?
It was here, Tennessee, Stanford, and then like Iowa offered me during my senior season. And, like North Carolina offered me during my senior season. You know, because things weren't going great at Notre Dame. I was Weiss's last class and then BK's first class. So however you look at it. So I think teams are kind of coming in as like the potential coaching changes happening with Weiss leaving. But it really was probably here at Stanford at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, my mom, like the education part was always really big for her. And so like I liked Tennessee on the visit. Like it was a cool place, good time. Obviously football is a big deal and
Rocky Top.
It was cool.
Lane Kiffin's a great coach.
Yeah, but my mom, I remember her saying it's Stanford or Notre Dame. And you're going to have to pick between those two. So, she runs the show. So I made sure that she that I was taken care of.
I feel like quarterbacks, like to get a career as a quarterback is a little bit harder in high school. So I feel like I've only seen, I guess being from Atlanta, like I've only seen quarterbacks either they have 50 plus offers or right. these quarterbacks have no offers at all. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like,
I can agree with
that. They got all the intangibles, all the arm talent, size, all that, or it's just like you don't have one or a couple of those things and you're not getting any offers. You know what I'm saying? I feel like quarterbacks a little harder.
Yeah, there's a couple, like one, recruiting's changed a ton. And I'm not old. I don't feel old, but like it was, I don't know, 14 years ago, 13 years ago. And like the way recruiting's changed is so much earlier now. Mm. Like people really didn't, unless you were like the guy, you weren't getting offered till after your junior season. So you really weren't making decisions until that summer going into your senior year. That was like now what is the summer going into your junior year? It was a year later then. The other hard part is like, right, if there's 120 Division I teams, you know, in a class, or in a cycle, you're going to take one quarterback at most schools.
Yeah.
You know, if you take three DBs, you know, that's 360 players versus 120 available at quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take four wideouts, you know, it's 480 players or a pool that you're picking from. Whereas quarterbacks, most years, you're only going to take one. So it's just a smaller pool of players. Right. And if you look at like how many Power Five schools there are, that number gets even shrunk in half. And so when you look at like true Power Five quarterbacks, you're probably talking about 40 to 50 a year.
Yeah.
And like that position is so hard to project that, you know, half of them don't make it. Like you go back and look at the class I came out with. Like I'll do it. I came here with two other quarterbacks. There were three of us in my class at Notre Dame.
Really?
And I'll talk to one of them about like our class and we'll joke around. Like you go look at the top 10, none of them made it. None of them ended up
playing. None of the quarterbacks.
No, it was like a weird list.
Yeah, in the top 10 recruiting class?
Yeah, like if you look at the top 10 quarterbacks in that class, none of them really panned out to be like, you know, I'd have to go back through it, but like none of them are playing in the league right now.
Wow. So when you were getting recruited, what, I guess, quote unquote, is made to be the prototypical quarterback, the 6'3", the 6'5"?
It was still the size thing. You know, I think,
was that still?
Yeah, I think that's shifted over the last 8 to 10 years. Like, okay. You see 6 foot guys having success in college and in the NFL, right? Like Russell Wilson was kind of the first guy to break that mold.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of opened the door for everyone else. Then you see like the Bakers and the Kyler Murrays and those guys have, you know, win the Heisman and have so much success.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you know, Bryce Young now, you know, our own version with Ian.
Yeah.
But back then it was still like 6'2" was short, you know, like 6'2" was like the cutoff. Ooh. And I was 6'1 3/4". So it was like, I'm wearing Timberlands on visits, you know, putting the stuff in the heels. And it's like, I just want to measure in at 6'2" because that was like the cutoff.
Mm.
You know, that was the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And now it's like 6'2". Hey, that's more than enough.
Yeah.
You know, because the game's just changed a little bit.
I always felt like coaches, a quarterback's size are equated to arm talent.
I mean, like you look at a bigger quarterback and you're going to like naturally think, oh, he's got a strong arm.
Okay.
You know, but you look at the way people throw now has changed a little bit. Like
the mechanics?
Like you see like the whippier throws and like less of like the follow through and more of like the back hip pop, like kind of like how Buckner throws a little bit, like kind of that new age way of throwing. And like people are creating torque and momentum using rotation and their back hip. And like it used to not be that way. So now you see smaller guys who can friggin' sling it. Like Everett Golson, who I played with, he wasn't a big guy. He had a freaking cannon.
Mm-hmm.
Like his arm was crazy.
So do you, obviously you're the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach here. So do you coach differently? Like with that new age, I guess?
Yeah, like style? I think it's, it's even evolved my 5 years here. Like 5 years ago, it was less frequent as it is now. You know, I try, you know, mechanically as much as we can, we try to focus more on the lower body when they're here. Like you don't want to change too much about how the ball's coming out.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk about it and I've had to like work to understand some of those mechanics because it's different than what I grew up with, what I've learned. So, you know, I've reached out to like some of those quarterback guru specialty guys like Ian's guy, Will Hewlett does a really good job. And like I've had conversations with him just so I can understand it better so that I can, you know, help and have those conversations with our guys as they come in.
I feel like that's a great thing that coaches in this new age are adapting to because like even with DB coaches, it's hard to change a guy's like flow of play and technique. And like Coach Mickens himself, he's really good at coaching per your style. And I feel like when you were probably in college or in high school, even before coaches weren't really doing that, they were like, this is my way. and this is how you're going to have to learn how to do it, correct?
Yeah, I think in the quarterback position, so much mental. Like, yeah, you're going to improve them and you're going to fundamentally get their base better. But so much of what we do, you know, week in and week out, it's about the mental side. And you want the other stuff to be able to just kind of flow. You know, like you want it. Hey, if a guy's open, we want to count on the fact that we can get it to him, you know. And if we're out of position and we're not, and our posture's not right or our target line's not right, yeah, we'll talk about that fundamentally. But there's a lot of other stuff that goes on, you know. And spring ball is a good time to focus on the fundamentals because you're not game planning and you're not in the weeds that way. But, you know, we've been fortunate that our guys are pretty smooth mechanically. But
coming in.
Yeah.
I guess kind of the way you're talking about, I kind of think of it like a golf swing. Like everyone has their own unique, you know what I'm saying, type of thing.
Yeah, and it's like a specialist, like kicker or punter or you know, like a pitcher in baseball. Everyone's got their own little feel to it.
Yeah. What would you say is your favorite, like, quarterback, the throwing motion, I guess, in the league?
I mean, Rodgers is pretty fun.
I was going to say, you know, like,
that's probably the best. Yeah, that's probably the best example. Yeah, man, he's hard to beat. Like, Garoppolo's really clean. If you ever watch him throw, like, you know, people don't think – if you just watch his mechanics, they're really clean. Yeah, I mean, they're really clean.
Actually, I wouldn't have even thought of Garoppolo.
Maybe Garoppolo?
No, neither.
No, that's like if you watch him throw, you'll – like, he's that new age stuff. And, like, when Ian was here, that was a guy he always wanted to watch because he plays with a great base. There's a lot of – or very little wasted movement. And he's not one that you'd think of. But when you watch him, like, fundamentally, he's really good.
Gotcha. So speaking about – oh, you got some?
Actually, Garoppolo was my class. He's playing in the league.
Oh,
but he was with Eastern Illinois. He's from Chicago. He's from 20 minutes from where I'm from.
Okay.
But he made it. But, like, he went to Eastern. Like, he wasn't a top
40 top kid. 10.
Yeah.
Was he drafted? What was he?
Yeah, he was second round pick.
I didn't know that. Okay.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Want to increase your salary? Discover your earning potential with CareerBuilder. CareerBuilder.com knows you have superpowers that make you good to your job. They're called skills. And CareerBuilder.com has tools specially designed to help you move up, like CareerBuilder CoLab. Check out resume examples. Learn what recruiters are looking for. Search salaries. And view different career paths based on your skills. You'll be amazed to know how many ways you can use the skills you already have to build your future. Visit CareerBuilder.com.
So speaking about your time here at Notre Dame, talk about like your growth into getting your starting job and who were you up against, like competing
against?
Yeah,
as a player. My 4 years were pretty wild. So my freshman year, I came in like with three quarterbacks, right? And came early. The other two did not, which was obviously a leg up a little bit. You know, went through spring, got almost no reps. Then in summer, I don't know, something clicked. You know, like I felt like I remember coming here to throw, and like my first ever day I threw with the guys in the indoor Loftus. I remember saying,
practicing Loftus.
You know, it was like February or March, and we're doing just like a routes on air.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at, you know, some of the other quarterbacks, and there was a kid a couple of years ahead of me, it was a five star who's a good friend of mine. But I remember thinking, all right, I can play with these guys. Like I can throw with these guys. Right. You know, I didn't until you do it, you don't know.
Yeah.
And so I had some confidence, and then spring I didn't do much, you know, but I felt all right. And then, you know, summer happened and we were doing like the summer player run deals and we're throwing and like something just clicked and all of a sudden the offense was kind of flowing and I felt really good. And then like the first couple of days in camp, I felt really good. And then I was slowly starting to creep into like that backup role and like solidifying myself there. And we had our first Saturday scrimmage. And I think like my first drive, we went right down, scored. Second drive, I came down on a helmet and like sprained my thumb pretty bad. And I couldn't really throw, but I finished the day and had a good day. And I remember like that we had a day off and another practice. And that was when like I couldn't do anything. But Coach Kelly told me, he's like, hey, you're going to be the backup. Just keep going. You're going to be the backup, which at the time was a big deal for me, you know. And
it's huge as a freshman.
Yeah. That's huge. And so so fast forward the second game of the year, we're playing Michigan at home. Dane got poked in the eye. And I go in, and my very first pass was a play we called Wolverine. I'll never forget it. Play called Wolverine because we were playing Michigan, and the signal was like the stripes on the helmet.
Yeah.
So I remember looking over to Mulvey, our signaler, and they're like, they're doing this. I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm like, holy shit, he's calling Wolverine. It was a flea flicker. It was a flea flicker throwback.
Your first play.
First pass.
That's a lot of trust.
First pass.
Yeah, I threw a pick. And so I like it was like essentially like post deep over, you know, and I threw it and I was like, oh, it's a freaking dime. Like it came out good. Like I saw the opening, I anticipated. I'm like, oh, it's a freaking dime. And then boom, linebacker underneath it makes the play. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And then I went in for another series, like one hop to field hitch, and then they pulled me.
Two picks?
No, no, just like one hopped it. Like I like skinned it short. You know what I mean?
I thought you said
No. Like one hopped one. Like,
yeah.
And
did we win this game?
No, we lost in dramatic fashion.
Jesus.
And so whatever. Like that was obviously a learning experience. Yeah. And then a couple weeks later, we were playing Navy in New York and we were playing at the Meadowlands. And we got our ass kicked, like 49-14 or 42-14.
You said Navy?
Yeah. Their fullback went for like 200, caught a wheel for a touchdown.
Is that the last time they beat us?
Has to be.
I don't know. Probably.
It has to be, dude.
But we got crushed. And
fullback caught a wheel route?
Yeah, for a touchdown. He was a bad dude. And their quarterback was like a really good player.
Oh, wow.
And but I went in for the last drive, like in garbage time. And I went like 8-for-9. We scored. And that was one of the only, you know, and I felt good. And then the next week, playing Tulsa at home, and Dane blew out his knee. And so then I ended up playing like 3.5 quarters. We threw the ball like 50-something times.
Oh,
wow. Lost. It was a tough week. There was a lot going on at the university and stuff with the program. And but then I ended up – we played Utah 2 weeks later. We had a bye week, played Utah, who was third in the country, then lost to TCU, and they were like 11th when they came in. It was senior night, and we won like 28-3. In my first start, which was unbelievable.
So, hold on.
And like senior night was cool. And then we played Yankee Stadium, Army beat them, played at SC, beat them for like the first time in 10 years. And then played the U in the bowl game, beat them. So like my four starts, we went 4-0.
That's money.
So then going into my sophomore year, there was a competition between me and Dane. They ended up naming Dane the starter. First half, played South Florida at home in the opener. He got pulled at half. They put me in. I played the rest, started the rest of the season that year. So then junior year.
Would you guys end that sophomore year?
We were 8-4 and lost to Florida State in the bowl game.
Okay.
You know, we were, look, the program's in a much different place now.
Is it?
You know what I mean? Okay. Like, you go 8-4 now. You know,
that's,
you guys, I mean, breaks loose.
Yeah. We've won 10. I've been back 5 seasons. We won at least 10 every year.
Yeah.
So then junior year, make a mistake in the offseason. Last day of class, my sophomore year. You know, drinking off campus, got in trouble. So I was suspended for the opener. So I wasn't really eligible to like compete to be the starter. And so then it was Everett, Andrew Hendricks, kid named Gunnar Keel, who was like a 5-star freshman coming in. And so Everett obviously became the starter. And then throughout that entire year, that was the 2012 season, went to the national championship. You know, like I had a role as kind of a guy that would come in if Everett was struggling or like 2-minute drive.
Like
so
a closer.
Yeah, that's what they made it, right? Yeah, but like my first game after the suspension, we played Purdue at home, and BK put me in for the 2 minute drive at the end. I haven't taken one rep. They didn't take one 7-on or one team all of camp because they needed these other guys who had never played to get all the experience.
Yeah.
And so then I was shocked. He's like, hey, you're going in for 2 minutes. No time to react. Warmed up, threw five balls, jogged off. We went down, kicked a field goal, won the game. Wow. And then a couple weeks later, we played Michigan at home.
Bang.
Bang.
We played Michigan at home, you know, big game under the lights, all that. Everett was struggling a little bit, turned it over. He put me in like late first, early second quarter, played the rest of the game, had my only rushing touchdown. And then I thought at that point, like, okay, like maybe, you know, there's two games. Maybe I'll start moving forward. Mm-hmm. You know, post-game press conference, he says we're staying with Everett. And so it was, you know, frustrating, but I cared about the team, you know, and I wanted to continue to support and have a role where I could. And so there was a couple other games like Stanford I played at the end, and we had a nice run there to win the game. Played like one play against Oklahoma at Oklahoma on like 3rd and 8 because Everett's helmet came off. You guys
blew Oklahoma out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like one play, 3rd down, threw a stop route to Tyler for a 1st down, jogged off. You know, it's just like random things like that. And then
that was your entire junior year.
That was my junior year.
How frustrating is this?
It wasn't. Look, it really, after the Michigan game, I was a little frustrated for a couple of weeks, but like I found peace in my role towards the back half of the year. Like we were on such a special run, and we went, remember, we went like 8-5, 8-5.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're 10-0, 11-0. We're the number one team in the country. So just like I was so much in the moment that I didn't necessarily direct it back towards me. It was more about everyone else. And, you know, obviously the game against Bama didn't go great. And then, so heading into my senior year, I had a little bit of a decision. Like I had played and I knew I could play and I wanted to continue to play, but Everett was coming back and Everett was going to be the guy. And so I was faced with the decision, and this was before the portal. It was like, okay, do I want to transfer or do I want to stay at Notre Dame and graduate and be there to support my teammates? You would have had to sit out, or I would have gone to like, you know, like a Richmond or something. Like,
okay.
And take, if you went down to 1AA at the time, you didn't have to
sit out. Okay.
So I remember it was like during bowl prep, and I just, one more, I'm like, I'm not going to leave. So I woke up and just said, hey, I'm going to stay, and whatever my role is, I'm happy with. And, you know, I want to continue to help the team. And, you know, I met with coach and I met with Zach, who was one of our captains and one of my best friends. And we talked about it for a while. And then 6 months later in May, it was my 21st birthday. I was out in California with my best friend and my brother. And like, I'm getting these texts like, hey, have you heard anything about Everett? I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And, you know, he got kicked out of school. And so he got in trouble, got kicked out of school.
I never knew that.
And so my senior year, I ended up starting all 13 games, and we were, you know, 9-4. Yeah, I think 9-4 on the year. And but like, I decided to stay, you know, thinking, hey, I'm going to have a role. I'll be the backup. I'll play sporadically and, you know, continue to help the guys. But, you know, whatever happened with Ev. And, you know, I had a chance to start all the games my senior year.
That's money.
So it was like, every year, like nothing was just normal, you know, like not like none of them, not one year did I go into it saying, wow, this is a normal year.
Yeah,
you know, everything, there was ups and downs, you know, situations that were out of my control. And I just tried to, really for me, it was all about like the guys on the team. And you guys know it. You guys know how close everyone is. Yeah. It doesn't become as much about you in those moments.
For sure.
Can you talk about like, when you were playing, like, where did your confidence come from? Like, because I feel like so many things have happened to you and you just kind of, like, remain constant. Like, are you, like, a quiet confidence kind of guy? Are you, like, I'm going to talk about what I'm about to do and do it? Like,
Coach is a trash talker.
I know he's a trash talker now, but I'm trying to figure out what he was as a player, though. Believe me, I know that.
I'm a lot like I am now as a player.
I mean,
I wasn't, like, arrogant, you know, but, like, I had confidence, you know, probably too much at times, but yeah, I mean, I'd let people know, especially in practice, like our own guys, like I didn't mess with the other team a whole lot, but mostly, you know, like with our own group of guys, like I would talk and try to have fun with it. Yeah. I mean, I'm competitive as heck, as you guys know.
Oh, I couldn't tell.
So. Yeah. But, to like not know if you're going in or not is a really weird feeling, especially at that position. Like every hit ever would take, every situation, his helmet comes off, you're just like, you're kind of always on the edge of your seat trying to figure out what's going to be next. And so, like, I always felt like it was harder to prepare as the backup than it was as the starter. Because, like, as the starter, you're extra motivated all the time. Mm-hmm. As a backup, you have to like intrinsically motivate yourself to get to that level because you truly are like one play away.
One play away.
And
yeah.
at that position, it's a little bit different than others, you know, but like you have to be so motivated because if you're not, you're going to go in there for 3.5 quarters and you're going to let your teammates down. Yeah, like right. that was what always like, I can't let all these other guys down.
Right.
Look, you have the ability to like lose games, right? Like yeah. when you win games, it's everybody. But like as a quarterback, you can individually lose a game.
Yeah.
And I've done that. Like we played Pitt my senior year. I threw 2 picks in the 4th quarter. Like that is why we lost the game. And so like going into a locker room as a quarterback, knowing that you let everybody down and like, they're never going to get on you, but you know, guys talk and like, you know, there's going to be some chatter,
of course, of
but
course.
Like there's no lonelier feeling than like walking into a locker room and saying, wow, like I just threw 2 picks in the 4th quarter, one of them in our end zone. And we lost because of those, like all these guys that work so hard are now going home with a sick feeling in their stomach because you didn't do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so like as a quarterback, you got to like really, really own your preparation,
right.
you know? And like for me, I was never going to be athletic enough or skilled enough just to show up, you know, like I couldn't get away with just showing up. So I had to work at it. And so like that was always what drove me to work and get better and find ways to have some success on the field.
Yeah.
So kind of want to bring up like the transfer portal, because you, in your experience, like most guys, especially right now, would be out, right? If they deal with what you dealt with.
100%. Yeah.
So like especially in this era.
If the portal,
you would
100%.
But it wasn't there, like, so it wasn't there. But do you approach that conversation differently? Like, how do you approach that conversation? Because it is different now than when you played.
Yeah. You talking about like conversation with guys about the portal?
Yeah, like you had a conversation with someone like regarding like no position, like anyone.
Yeah, know? I think look, I always try to operate like with honesty first. You know, I think everybody's situation's independent to who they are. Look, I don't ever want to see people leave our program because I think we have great kids. But in my mind, I can justify certain guys leaving given their circumstances.
Yeah,
you know, and so if that's the case, I'm going to be up front and tell them like, hey, I don't want to see you go, but I can understand the reasons X, Y, and Z, what's leading you to this point.
That's what I think.
And like, we can try to help you find a landing spot because you are a great kid, or you might have a situation that, you know, you're stuck behind somebody that you're not going to beat out.
Mm.
You know, we never want to lose guys. And I think there are situations where it's not in your best interest to leave. And you know, maybe there's other areas where you can grow, or I think it's important that you did get a degree, you know, and I'm going to tell you that. Right. But everybody's situation is unique to them, you know, and like for certain situations, if you're a guy that's done everything right and you've worked hard and you've done everything that's asked of you and you want to go play ball, like that gives you an opportunity to go play ball. Like you're only going to have so many years to do that.
Right.
And look, I think we've had a wide spectrum of guys, you know, on both sides. And I just try to keep it as real as I can and tell them what I honestly think. And then my only goal is to try to help them. I'm not trying to skew anyone's decision. Like I've had those conversations with guys offensively and this is my honest opinion.
Yeah.
You know, if you need help with it, we're here for you. It's the same thing when guys are trying to decide whether or not they're going to go to the draft. Yeah. It's the same conversation.
And probably the same conversation for the future recruits, right?
Yeah, I mean, the recruiting stuff too, like, same thing. Like, I think once we decide to offer a kid or not offer a kid or need to see more, like, look, it doesn't do anybody any good to bullshit with them.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't do us any good. Doesn't do the player, the recruit, the train. Like, it doesn't do anybody any good.
Mm.
You know, so like, the quicker you can cut through all that and get to the facts of the situation, I think it just helps clear everything up.
Gotcha. Mm.
So speaking about Notre Dame and South, you already...
Can I answer that one more thing on that? Like, I feel like players sometimes don't always trust the coaches. You know, like everybody thinks, hey, they're just saying this because they only care about the program or they only want us here because they're... Like, I would tell you, in my experience working with the guys upstairs, like very, very, very rarely have I ever thought anybody's intentions were like selfish. You know, like I truly believe that. And I would encourage, like, when guys have things like that, like, we're going to try to help you and we're going to try to give you the honest truth. You know, that's part of our job too. You know, like, we know we're helping guys try to reach goals and stuff. And it's very rare that you find people that are more selfish. And I just think you know, we're all in this thing together, and we've all, you know, gone through times together, and we're trying to help everybody find their own path.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top
not
of it.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because he didn't need it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Want to increase your salary? Discover your earning potential with CareerBuilder. CareerBuilder.com knows you have superpowers that make you good at your job. They're called skills. And CareerBuilder.com has tools specially designed to help you move up, like CareerBuilder Colab. Check out resume examples. Learn what recruiters are looking for. Search salaries. And view different career paths based on your skills. You'll be amazed to know how many ways you can use the skills you already have to build your future. Visit CareerBuilder.com.
Spoke a lot about football and Notre Dame. How was Notre Dame as a collective university outside of football from while you were here?
Yeah, I did a bad job, man. I lived in a bubble when I was here, you know, and like part of it's my fault. You know, I know that, but part of it was I had a tough experience at times. Right. And so like if I could do something over again, I wish I would have allowed this place to like really jump into the culture and the community and done more and like experienced more and interacted with other, you know, sports and student body, like just had a better relationship with everyone else.
Definitely. Even without the scrutiny that you've been through, like I don't think any of us have been to it to the depths that you have been to it. We still put a blinder just because of the mundane life that we live. And this weekend with Coach Freeman, what he did, I had a blind eye to a lot of stuff that you're mentioning. But this week it was great. And it opened up my third eye to Notre Dame and Notre Dame community and what Notre Dame has to offer.
Yeah, like the guys that were back this weekend, like, you know, there's a handful of guys I played with, a lot of people I've known or met through the years. Like, they were so grateful just to have the opportunity to be back and to reconnect and like reconnect with each other, but also just like reconnect within the program. Like, you go look on Twitter of like the former players that are sending stuff out. Like, there's a certain feeling you have, you know, in the stadium with your boys, like, and you lose that as time goes on. And to be able to like recapture that and remind yourself of these relationships that meant so much to you, you know, like 10 years from now, you guys are going to sit around and you'll text and you'll talk every once in a while, but it's not going to be like it is now.
You know,
and then you have an opportunity to get back together. It's the truth, though. You know, like I lived with the same four guys for 3 years and, you know, we see each other, you know, once or twice a year now as a whole group. You know, we try like heck, you know, a bunch of them have kids and, you know, it just gets away from you. And if you have that opportunity to all get back together, like it's really valuable. And so like for free to do that, you know, and for Biv to set it up, it was really a cool weekend.
Definitely. How do you, like, what's the best advice to maintain these relationships? Because shoot, we talk about having this podcast and we always plan. We're going to live in the same state and live in the same state.
It's always going to be, you know, it's never,
it's not going to be.
Look, I think it's easy now with like the way phones and meet and social media and the way people can stay connected. You know, I would say like, don't allow petty stuff to get in the way, you know, like you lose touch with guys over like the dumbest shit, you know? Yeah. And then before you know it, you can't reconnect.
Chuck, geek it out, bro.
All I can think about is how me and Kyle were. taking each other's doors off the hinges.
Oh, yeah. For April Fool's. That was a little April Fool's fight in here.
Yeah.
It's all good now.
We're smooth. Yeah, we're good now. Going out to
but, see like, that'd be the only thing. Like, the four guys I lived with, we all still talk almost, you know, a couple times a week and all that. But, you know, we don't get to see each other. But, you know, and then we've had some things, you know, between us that have created some distance. But, you know, we've found ways to get through it. And I would just, you know, not allow petty stuff to kind of build up. And, you know, if you don't, you know, that's something that you can keep it strong. And like the other thing, it's unfortunate. We've had a lot of guys from like our era pass away in the last couple of years. And so like the other thing too, is like checking on people and talking to people and keeping things alive. Like you never really know what someone might be having. And, you know, we talk about as a group, like, you know, we'll be there for each other. And there's so many people that care about you because of like the special relationship you form in a locker room that, you know, it's unfortunate to see that. But I think, you know, some of those situations have happened, which has allowed us to kind of re-strengthen and reconnect and make sure that we're all there for each other.
Definitely. So we're going to go to Outside the Garage right now, a segment that we do where our fans, family, friends, they send us questions via Twitter, email, and we basically answer them. So this week's question comes from Connor Davidson, and he says, dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would you pick? And you got to start us off.
Dinner with three people, dead or alive.
Three? That's hard.
Yeah, that's tough. Okay.
You know, I'd never met my grandfather,
mm-hmm.
so that'd be one of them. JFK.
Okay. Interesting.
I'd probably throw my buddy Mitch in there. Yeah, he's just a buddy of mine. Like, he's been my best friend since I was a little kid. So, I figure him and I would have a good, you know, we'd be able to kind of feed off each other with the conversation. That's a tough three people.
That's three
tough,
people. Yeah, that's a tough one.
It's tough.
I think I'm going to go with Michael Jackson. I was going to say my grandpa as well, but I'll switch it up. Elon Musk and Kanye, maybe? I always use Kanye for these questions, but maybe it's Kanye, honestly. I don't know.
What you got, Connor?
J. Cole is one of them.
I want to redo mine.
This is not going to be great. Okay, I'm going to do J. Cole, Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Okay, you did steal one of mine. We always talk Musk is one of them. I'm going to say Elon Musk.
I'm taking Kanye out of mine and putting Lawrence Taylor.
Lawrence Taylor?
Yes. Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, I love Lawrence Taylor.
That's the most random. Like,
I need it. I need to have that conversation.
He loves him. Lawrence Taylor, John Daly type.
Yeah.
Oh, John Daly.
John Daly.
Yeah, I love John
Daly. Can I redo mine?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Paul McCartney.
Okay.
My grandfather and JFK.
Okay. That's money.
By Mick. Mitch? By Mitch.
Yeah, he's out. I can have two.
Gotta get him.
See Mitch.
Let me say MLK. I want to say my granddad because I've never met him.
Say it.
That's a hard ass question.
I'm gonna say Albert Einstein. I gotta see
interesting one.
You'd be hard. Yeah, but hard. All right, we got another segment called Rapid Questions where we just try to answer as fast as possible. Right off the top of your head, whatever the first thought is. So the first question is Mahomes or Rodgers?
Rodgers.
Country or the city?
City.
Movies or TV shows?
TV shows.
Four passing TDs or two rushing touchdowns?
For me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rushing. I only had one in my career.
The Midwest or the West Coast?
Midwest.
Home or away games as a player or a coach? Do a player and a coach?
As a player, away games.
Okay.
As a coach, home games, so I can go home after.
Cake or ice cream?
Ice cream.
What's your favorite pizza topping?
Pepperoni.
What's your favorite golf course you've ever played on?
Bobba Link in Chicago.
Okay. Would you rather have Calvin Johnson or Randy Moss on your team?
Randy Moss.
Ooh. That's great. Beach or lake?
Wait. Okay. Hold on. Never mind. Sorry.
lake.
CJs or Ulfs?
definitely CJs. Not even close.
Favorite Halloween costume as a kid?
I mean, I went as like a football player every year. So,
Kanye or Drake?
Kanye.
It's the last thing you cooked.
I just made rice and barbecue for our quarterbacks.
A big dog or a small dog?
Big dog.
What's your favorite holiday?
Christmas.
Skydiving or parasailing?
Skydiving.
Breakfast or dinner?
Breakfast.
Favorite spot on Indy's campus?
Grotto.
Golf in Florida or Cali?
Cali.
In your opinion, what's the most underrated football player?
Ever?
Ever. No, just ever. Ever. Ever.
Steve Young.
Steve Young?
Yeah.
Quarterback from San Francisco.
All right, now.
All right, that you play with. Yeah. Okay, now.
Theo Riddick. Underrated? Yeah. Like, not the best.
That the running back?
Yeah.
Like running back. He kind of.
He played slot early and then he moved him back to running back his last year. He played running back in the league.
Okay.
Yeah, Theo. Gotcha. Very underrated. Lines, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, one more. I always add in one more. But if you could give advice to younger coaches or high school coaches of keeping their room tight because you have a really tight room and the quarterbacks all love each other, what would it be?
Like, I think what we've had that's been really cool is that we've had just a bunch of guys that have been really authentic, you know, and I try to treat them all the same, you know, and like, mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is you got to coach them hard and you got to know when to get on them, but you also got to have like the ability to have a relationship with them outside of football. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where our strength's been, is that those guys know, like, it's not only football, right? Like, we'll talk about whatever, you know, they'll come up to the office and talk about whatever, like they have. We've been able to build a lot of trust in the room that, like, whatever's going on, like, we can, it's kind of a safe place for them. And I think it's probably because, like, I've gone through it and I was here and I played and I'm still young enough to know, like, what it feels like. But I think you just have to have, like, a relationship with them that isn't only centered on one thing. And when you can, like, treat them like a person and not just like an athlete or a player.
Yeah.
And like, they're going to have more buy-in and they're going to want to be a part of the group.
Yeah. Right.
So, and we've had great, I mean, the kids have been unbelievable. You know, they've just been good dudes.
That does it.
Well, that was a very well said, KJ. Go ahead.
You want to hit that?
Thanks, Tommy Reese. I appreciate you, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Coach, for coming on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We, this upcoming week, the fourth member of the crew is partaking in the NFL draft. So
you
wish
guys
them luck.
Going to Vegas?
Going to
we
Vegas.
Are. Yeah, we are going to tomorrow. Vegas. Cheer them on.
I thought we had a lift Thursday.
I don't have anything.
We're making it up tomorrow morning.
Bayless gave us a pass. Yeah, listen to this. We're making it up Tuesday morning, tomorrow morning, and then we're working out on Saturday.
Are you guys doing a pod from Vegas?
It's that's TBD.
That's working in TBD. The
TBD.
Will you guys be at the table?
No.
We're
going to be at the, I don't know yet. Like the hotel.
Yeah, you'll be somewhere. Yeah.
Somewhere it'll be so quiet.
So
quietly sitting there.
Yeah, you guys will have no fun that night. I'll tell you what, like, some of my favorite memories with like my buddies. Like, I had two roommates that were first round picks. Zach and Tyler both taken in the first round.
That's right.
Those like Thursday, I think they were both Thursday nights still.
Did you go to the draft for both of them?
We didn't go to the draft, but we had like draft parties for them.
Yeah.
Like, probably two of the most fun nights I had in college. Wow. Like, I mean, one, there's so much emotion and like excitement and happiness that goes into it.
Yeah.
Like those, those two nights, like, probably like seriously two of the most fun nights I ever had in college.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Where were the parties at?
They were both at their houses. So Ty was from Fort Wayne. You can ask Griff about that night.
Wait, so that's even like, they were at home too.
They were
and
at
that
home.
Was still one of the most fun nights.
They just had, there was like 100. I mean, there were so many people there. Right. You're sitting there watching the draft. Then they get taken. Those nights, you guys will have a blast. I mean, I'm serious. Because you're so happy, you know? And like, you're just so pumped for your boy and like for that happening that like it's hard not to have a great time.
Definitely.
Well, looks like we'll be taking a little bit of a hiatus after this Thursday. So
honestly.
Thanks again, Coach, for coming on.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you all.
See you next time.
See you.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified? Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.